Do you have too much clutter in your life? We had a terrific chat with Megan Golightly, who is a professional organizer and declutterer. She's coming to the Winnipeg Home and Garden Show this weekend to give you some great tips. She gave us a little sneak peek on perhaps how to start your journey of declutterance. Not sure if that's a word. I just made it up. Let's go with it. Also, because it's Wednesday, we had our weekly Wednesday Jets chat. Leah Hextall joined us with another fiery take on the Jets. And inspired by some cruise ship passengers stranded in Africa, we discussed the times we were late, and it was bad. I'm Brett McGarry, alongside Greg Mackling. We are Mackling and McGarry, and this is the Wednesday, April 3rd podcast for The Start. Mackling and McGarry, before we do anything, just following up on Sarah McCarthy's note on Hart coming to Winnipeg. Heads up that you can win tickets on the news this week with Richard Cloutier and Julie Buckingham. Of course, because Julie is the contest queen.
Yes.
She has concocted a contest called Have a Heart, Give a Heart, and We'll Take Care of Business. See what she did there? Hart and BTO.
You know, Julie Buckingham is absolutely a spitfire of creativity. She is something else. If you don't tune into the news 3 till 6 on most days here on 680 CJB, you're really missing out. Richard and Julie do a tremendous job of recapping the day's events, the news. They have fun, but they also, like, everything that you need is in that 3 hours of radio. In terms of being caught up on what's going on and what you can expect over the next several days, we have a little bit of fun with Richard and Julie from time to time, especially when they get those opportunities. I'll put that word in quotation marks, to have a shorter show because of our Winnipeg Jets coverage. It's like when I make fun of Saskatchewan, it's really out of jealousy that I'm making fun of Richard and Julie when we talk about them having a very long show when their show runs from 3 till 4. It's because Brett and I can only dream of the day when we might have a 1 hour show due to alternate programming.
We need the Jets to play in what, would Finland even do it? We always go to Finland because you went to Finland to see the Jets play. So that's where I always default. But would that, if they played at like 7 PM there,
still wouldn't do it.
Yeah, they'd have to go further east.
All right. I don't know, Siberia might be too far east. I'm not sure. I think the point here is, Brett, I think we're out of luck when it comes to the Jets giving us any time off. Unless they decide to do one of those morning games like the Moose have done, their school day game. Mm. I don't know any NHL teams that do those school day games, but Mark Chipman, if you're listening, I think a school day game for the Jets would be a great idea.
So if you want to win those tickets on the news, Julie and Richard are asking you to send them a story about who you would want to give the tickets to. Could be a place you regularly do business with. Could be someone who takes care of you or a health care professional in your life who, despite it all, takes care of people. So you can text in your story to 204-780-6868 anytime during the day or particularly during the news with Rich and Julie weekdays, 3 until 6, to win some tickets for Hart. We have tickets to give away for Dauphin's Country Fest. We'll tell you at 6:45 how you can win those. And winning tickets for a show you'd like to see, rather than having to buy them, would certainly be friendly to your budget.
I see what you've done there. You've dovetailed our initial conversation into a conversation about the biggest story of the day. Yesterday, Manitoba's provincial budget, the very first budget from the provincial NDP, Wab Kanoo, Premier Adrian Salah, Finance Minister. And we were warned, the province told us, the government told us, the NDP during the campaign told us their priority would be healthcare, $8.2 billion of healthcare spending in this budget. So, you know, from that point of view, they are walking the walk. Whether that money accomplishes what they are setting out to do, that is a whole other question. and the answers to which will be years in the making.
Question of the day at CJOB.com. If you were in charge of the budget, what would be your top priority? 42% said healthcare, 22% said crime, 14% infrastructure and roads, and then 21% said tax cuts. So you can still weigh in on that at CJOB.com, but we will be updating that question of the day at some point this morning. And we will be getting some reaction to this. Greg at 8:05 will be heading out of the perimeter highway to find out what the rural reaction is.
Yeah, the Association of Manitoba Municipalities President Cam Blight will join us. We talk about our perimeter-itis. Tomorrow morning, of course, is our Small Town Salute segment, but this morning we want to get reaction from the municipalities, those areas outside the city that have been, you know, dealing with healthcare issues that are not necessarily dissimilar to what we deal with here in the city of Winnipeg or maybe even in the city of Brandon. But there are different challenges, of course, on so many fronts. Life outside of a city is much different than it is inside, and right at the top of the list has to be access to healthcare. So we'll find out if those announcements contained in the budget are good enough, or are they all moving things in the right direction, in the opinion of the Manitoba Association of Manitoba Municipalities, AMM, or would they like to have seen more in the budget? I suspect there will always be those that want more, Brett, but there's only so much to go around. So we'll find out, you know, we'll get the take of that organization coming up after 8:00.
It's a budget that will get Manitobans and their families off the waiting list and into the doctor's office. It's a budget that lowers costs for families so parents can stop worrying and start saying yes. It's a budget that will make it easier for more Manitobans to join the middle class and stay there.
Manitoba's NDP government has unveiled its plans for the upcoming fiscal year in a $24 billion budget with a deficit sitting at nearly $2 billion and a goal of reducing it by half this year. The NDP says it's aiming to balance the books this term, finishing with an $18 million surplus in 2027-28.
It's a budget that includes new spending, new projects, and some new changes to property taxes. Global's Marnie Blunt has more.
We made a commitment to the people of Manitoba that we would put Manitoba on a positive path forward by rebuilding healthcare and by bringing in lower costs for you and your family. Today, we are delivering on that promise.
$8.2 billion is budgeted for revamping healthcare. That includes hiring 1,000 more healthcare workers by this time next year, spending $65 million to reduce ER wait times, and $635 million on capital projects, including building the previously announced ERs at the Victoria Hospital and in Eriksdale. There are also promises for two new personal care homes in Winnipeg, one in Arburg, and the previous announced facility in Lac Da Bonnie. Money has also been set aside for a supervised consumption site. It could open sometime next year. The Premier, confident Manitoba has the incentives to attract healthcare workers.
Let's face it, we have a real competitive advantage in housing. Even a physician cannot buy their own home in Vancouver these days. But a nurse, a healthcare professional, a healthcare aide can still afford to buy a house here in Manitoba.
On affordability, the province is extending the gas tax cut for 3 months, saving you about 14 cents a liter at the pumps. Tax credits are increasing for renters and seniors. MPI premiums are going down by 5%. Rebates are being offered for buying new and used electric and hybrid vehicles. And prescription birth control, as previously announced, will be free. One major change, in 2025, the school tax rebate and education property taxes will be axed in favor of a new homeowners affordability tax credit that could save some homeowners up to $1,500. It will mean an extra $229 a year in savings for a home valued at $350,000. A home valued at $437,000 will be unaffected. Above that, it will start to cost more, up to $1,000 more for a home valued at $850,000. The tax credit will result in another $148 million in tax revenue for the province.
People who are in the market for a home in the suburbs are going to pay more than that, and they're going to pay more property taxes as a result of that.
The opposition says this will set Manitobans back.
Yes, they're giving a bit of a rebate, but actually when you really drill down to it, it's going to be a significant loss to Manitobans, and I think it's going to hurt more people than it's going to help.
The budget has also committed to conducting an inquiry into the construction of the Winnipeg Police headquarters, although no timeline was provided for that. Marnie Blunt, Global News.
So you heard the premier there talking about affordability and that being a potential advantage in terms of attracting doctors and other medical professionals to Manitoba. I know Lauren Remillard of the Winnipeg Chamber of Commerce was a little disappointed that there weren't more details in the budget, more incentives, more opportunities to grow the economy elsewhere in the private sector. And so that's my question. Part of, at least one of the questions I have is how are we going to take advantage of Manitoba's affordability advantage versus so many of the other provinces across the country, especially when it comes to purchasing a home? I know you just heard some concern about property tax and how those that live in a home worth $850,000 or more are going to be paying more in property tax. Is that counterintuitive to this advantage? I think there's a conversation to be had there as well. So that's a big thing for me, Brett. It's one thing to come through on all your promises, or at least working towards your promises on healthcare. But the premier's also said he wants to build the economy. What's he doing to do that?
Question of the day at CJOB.com. It's Provincial Budget Day in Manitoba. If you were in charge of the budget, what would your top priority be? 41.49% say healthcare, 21.81% say crime, 22.34% say tax cuts, and 14.36% say infrastructure and roads. So you can still cast your vote at CJOB.com. And a heads up, if you're like me and you're a vapor, can't shake the nicotine addiction, the province is going to add their own tax, which will match the federal tax,
okay,
which is... might be the kick in the butt that I finally need to kick.
Oh, that's that interesting, Brett.
Well, because the federal tax almost doubled the cost of my stuff. And if the province is adding another tax, that's not going to be a financially feasible alternative, which was one of part of the allure of making the switch from smoking to vaping. It was way cheaper. Now I just got to get rid of it altogether. We have tickets to give away for Dauphin's Country Fest, a pair of two-day passes and camping to Dauphin's Country Fest running June 28th to June 30th. You can also enter online for a chance to win Country Fest road trip. Go to CJOB.com for that. But today's question, Greg, has to do with being late. What happened?
Globalnews.ca, here's the headline. 8 cruise ship passengers stranded in Africa. After arriving late to boarding, I'm going to read just a part of this, a group of 8 cruise passengers were left stranded in this port in West Africa after the vessel that they're traveling on did not allow them to reboard due to their tardiness. 6 Americans, 2 Australian tourists were supposed to be on a dream vacation, quickly turned into a nightmare when they arrived back at port from a private tour to find the boat had already closed its doors and denied them entry despite communication from the tour operator to the Coast Guard, etc. It's, nope, sorry, you were supposed to be back at 3 p.m. You're late. You're not getting back on the ship.
Oh, boy. So you can read more on that at CJOB.com or globalnews.ca. But our question then today is, what's the time you were late? And it was bad. Tell us a story for a chance to win. Cameron Poitras, how about you kick us off?
Well, there's, it was when I was living in Calgary, I kind of got to be friends with this guy at that worked at the radio station, and he had sort of like, he had like a frat house with like 3 of his other buddies. It was actually kind of a fun place to go. And so I would head there, and then we would go out and we would do stuff, you know, as, you know, kids in their young, their lower in their younger 20s get up to. Mm-hmm. But there was a period of time when the guy that I kind of knew through work, we'll call him Ross, he started dating this new woman, and slowly but surely, over the course of this period of time, and it was over about 2 or 3 months, we ended up waiting for him. For it started off with like a half hour, then it became 45 minutes, then it became an hour, and it was a constant thing that whenever we made plans or whatever he did, and it wasn't just me, it was everybody else, like his friends who I kind of become friends with. We all had to end up sitting there and wait for him every single time. And this, you know, it just added up to so much frustration. It was ridiculous. And like, what do you say? Do you confront him? You kind of make snide comments after a while saying like, man, dude, we're sitting around waiting for you all the time. He's like, yeah, I know. Well, you know, she's, and this is like, how much longer are you going to blame her, dude? Like you're a human being.
I was just going to say that.
You're a human being. Like you can say, listen, hey, we got to get going. You know, it's okay to be 10 minutes late, you know, every now and then, but
yeah,
it just gets to be something. It becomes really irritating.
I can relate to this. Over 10 years ago, I was with somebody and we became, it hurt my soul to become known because I always tried to be punctual and we would be late perennially. Like you could count on it. We were dependably late and it was because of her. And regardless of what I said to her, like, we got to go. We're supposed to be there at 7, not 7:15, not 7:30, 7. Yeah. It didn't matter.
Well, you know, Brett, we can't all be wizards.
A wizard is never late, Frodo Baggins. Nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to.
You're going to argue with Gandalf the Grey?
Way to go, Cap. Sarah McCarthy, what about you?
Well, I despise being late as well. And one time in college, it was a new semester. And usually I would like go around and try to like find my classes ahead of time because, you know, all these loops and different ways you could go around the campus, confusing, complicated, some wings you never go to again after having one class there in that area. But for one class, I wasn't really motivated, I guess, to find my economics class ahead of time. So it wasn't even the first day. It was just another day during like that first week where I ended up being late because I took a wrong turn or two and ended up somewhere where I wasn't supposed to be and had to backtrack. But this teacher, Mr. Chapman, had a strict policy that at like 10 a.m., doors shut, you're locked out, and was locked out that day. So I never did that again. Never again.
That happened to me, my TV instructor at Red River Creative Communications, Dean Cooper. Mm-hmm. I was a couple minutes late. And he said, if you can't bother to show up on time, don't bother to come at all. And he slammed the door on me.
Wow.
It feels like the end of the world in the moment.
Yeah.
It does.
It's a lesson learned for most people.
Yeah. Well,
in my case, I've told this story before, but I was getting ready. I was rushing to get ready and get out to make it to school. And as I was hastily putting on my parka, I shattered one of the light fixtures in the kitchen. Oh. And I mean shattered. Like it was like a grenade went off. And so there's glass everywhere. And I couldn't just leave. We had a dog. So I had to clean up. So I was able to clean it up pretty quickly, but it made me late.
I phoned him.
I'm going to be late.
Come on.
But it didn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're in our business. If you're late, who cares? You're game over. Greg, what about you?
Well, it wasn't a cruise ship, but I was on a bus tour to Minneapolis. Would have been back in 1987. Was there with my buddy Dave. We went down to Minneapolis for the weekend to see the Minnesota Golden Gophers play the Michigan Wolverines in the Little Brown Jug game on Saturday. And then it was Bo Jackson and the Los Angeles Raiders versus the Minnesota Vikings.
Wow, what a weekend.
It was quite spectacular. And so we took the bus with our tour down to the Metrodome, the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome. By the way, the Metrodome is a non-smoking dome. One of the great announcements inside the Metrodome once upon a time. Well, they also had, in addition to not allowing you to smoke inside the dome, I came from a world where all the cups that you got for your pop were paper cups.
Yeah.
Well, they had these incredible plastic cups splashed with Minnesota Golden Gophers logos, Minnesota Vikings logos, Minnesota Twins logos. Well, of course, Dave and I needed 30 of these cups. And following the conclusion of the football game, we were gathering said cups and we were basically part of the cleanup crew. Eventually, we looked around and we better get going here because we're one of the last people in the seating bowl. And we went outside and sure enough, there went the bus on its way back to the hotel, to St. Louis Park. No idea really how far from downtown we were. And so we thought we were in really big trouble. It turned out to be only about an $11 cab ride to get back to the hotel, but we had no idea how far it was. We thought we were in really big trouble. I phoned my dad. I said, "Dad, missed the bus. Why are you calling me? Figure it out.
Can you come get us in Minnesota, yeah,
please?"
Sure, I'll leave in 10 minutes. Yeah. So tell us your story. The time you were late and it ended up pretty bad.
Mackling and McGarry, Leah Hextall joins us at 8:35 for our weekly Wednesday Jets chat. Jets back in action tomorrow night, Mr. Greg.
That's right. Calgary Flames are in town. Jets looking to avenge a loss to the Flames back on Louis Riel Day at the Saddle Dome. As Paul Edmonds just said a few moments ago, you win Monday night and then you lose Thursday. Really, that win on Monday is all for naught. So the pressure is on the Jets to get rolling here.
As you likely know by now, Manitoba's 2024 budget has been unveiled. And unsurprisingly, it has a heavy focus on improvements to the provincial healthcare system. Improving healthcare was a key piece of the NDP government's election campaign, with promises to reopen closed emergency rooms, recruit and hire additional staff, and reduce wait times across the province.
In his inaugural budget as finance minister, Adrian Salas says the government intends to make good on many of those promises, with a record $8.2 billion in healthcare spending, representing a 13.5% increase slated for health. Finance Minister Salas said people in northern and rural parts of the province will also benefit from improvements to the healthcare system.
We're rebuilding emergency care and coming through on the commitments we made to Manitobans, because no family should have to drive past a closed hospital in an emergency. And for families in rural and northern Manitoba who've watched over the last 7 years as their healthcare services have become fewer and farther away, we're working for you too. No more waiting for the ambulance to finally arrive. No more medical mystery tour, wondering which hospital has a doctor and when you'll finally get the care you need. This budget will train more advanced care paramedics to serve people in rural and northern communities and put more ambulances on the road so help will come faster when you need it most.
Cam Blight is president of Association of Manitoba Municipalities, joins us now. Cam, your reaction to these health-related pledges?
Good morning. And, you know, this is positive news for all of Manitoba. We're very excited to hear these announcements, especially restoring the rural doctor recruitment fund, investment in additional healthcare professionals, and reopening some of these closed emergency rooms. Every single Manitoban deserves good quality care close to home, and we really feel that the NDP government is going to be taking the necessary strides to try and fix that.
So a new funding formula for cities and municipalities is something that Winnipeg Mayor Scott Gillingham has been clamoring for alongside your organization. So what did you hear about that yesterday?
We saw a direct note in the budget that the province of Manitoba is committed to sitting down and working with the Association of Manitoba Municipalities, as well as the City of Winnipeg and other stakeholders, to set up a multi-year funding model. And that is excellent news. And it's something that we're looking forward to working collaboratively together with the City of Winnipeg and other stakeholders in the province of Manitoba on immediately.
Our guest, Cam Blight, President, Association of Manitoba Municipalities. So Cam, in an overall sense, do you feel the concerns of your organizations were heard, or were they largely ignored? How would you rate it?
You know what? I would say it's a mixed bag. You know, there's certainly some positives. We're pleased to see a 2% increase for a couple of our basket funding groupings. Unfortunately, that falls short of inflation. But we're really concerned that there was no investment in public safety. And I think that's one area that is somewhat off target, but we're going to continue to work with the province of Manitoba on to make sure that every Manitoba can feel safe in their own homes.
What would that look like in your mind?
Well, I think first of all, it's just making sure that there's consequences to the actions of these criminals, instead of putting the onus back on the homeowners and society in general. Also, well, it's got to be an investment into these communities so that they can develop their own community safety and well-being plans, invest in community safety officers if they so desire, and making sure that the municipal and RCMP police forces have the necessary resources and tools and staffing to be able to do their jobs accordingly.
And was there anything else that you were hoping to see that didn't make the cut, so to speak?
Well, there's a lot of issues that we're pushing for. And, you know, our four key pillars were investment in people, which I think they've done an excellent job on. Investment in infrastructure. I think we're looking for some more funding for water and wastewater type projects and strategic infrastructure across the province. So that's an area that we're going to have to work on a little bit more. We're looking for fair and predictable funding. You know, we've taken a small step in the right direction there. And public safety, that's the other major concern for us. So I think they've touched on the majority of them, but we certainly still have some work to do. And we look forward to sitting down at the table and working collaboratively together with the provincial government on these issues.
Well, that's sort of where my last question lies, Cam. Do you feel as though there's an open line, an open avenue of communication with the provincial government? Do you feel ignored or do you feel heard?
You know what? Absolutely. I have to give full credit to the provincial government. I feel we've had a great line of communication. We hope that continues, and we're ready and willing to sit down at the table whenever they are. And we know that they've extended that offer to us, and we're going to certainly take them up on it, and we're going to continue to work on behalf of all Manitobans.
Cam Blight, thank you very much for the time this morning. We appreciate it, sir.
Thank you so much.
Cam Blight is president of the Association of Manitoba Municipalities, and you can read all kinds of information on the Manitoba budget at cjob.com and globalnews.ca/Winnipeg. In a moment, we got to head to the ice for our weekly Wednesday Jets chat. But a reminder, we have tickets to give away for Dauphin's Country Fest 2-day pass with camping, June 28th to June 30th. We're asking you this morning about a time you were late and maybe there were consequences, or perhaps a time that it worked in your favor, or maybe you were able to avert disaster and not be late. Lisa says, I was an hour late for my own wedding because my maid of honor was convinced the wedding was at 7. I kept telling her, no, it's at 6. Anyway, it all worked out despite the guests being very curious about the delay. We will celebrate 20 years of marriage this year. Way to go.
Wouldn't the bride know better?
You'd think so.
Just saying.
I know. Anyway, that's fun. So tell us a story for a chance to win. We'll pick a winner at 9:15. In the meantime, the Winnipeg Jets return to action tomorrow night in their last game of a 5-straighter at Canada Life Center, hosting the Calgary Flames. A win by Winnipeg tomorrow night will punch their ticket to the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs.
When we last spoke to our next guest, Brett McGarry, the Jets were in the conversation for not only first in the Central. The idea of a President's Trophy banner for this team was a legitimate conversation as well. Well, what's next for this team may not be as important as what has happened. Let's get the point of view of ESPN host, commentator, and analyst. There it is. There's that word, Brett. It caught me. Leah Hextall, analyst.
It sounds like it's going really well today, boys.
Perfect.
At least for Greg.
I don't know about that word. That is the one that we have talked about for years, and it finally got me this morning. Analyst Leah Hextall. Okay, let's step aside from that fiasco. It's been said that those who do not learn history are doomed to repeat it. I see this as applicable to last season and the past 2 or so weeks for the Winnipeg Jets, Leah. Here's the question coming out of that from me to you. Is there any value at looking back at the Jets what they've done last year, what they've done over the last few weeks, as they look to lock down this playoff spot?
Well, I think if you don't learn from the experience that you've had in the past, then, you know, that's not the smartest thing to do, obviously. So taking a look back at last season and seeing how they struggled towards the end, and then, you know, basically they were at a 500 win percentage last year in the last 30 games, and they went on to lose in the first round to the Golden Knights, who, honestly, whether they would have had a 7-game win streak going into the playoffs last year, I think they would have lost to the Golden Knights. Let's remember what that team was. It's a Stanley Cup champion. So I don't necessarily know if their struggles at the end of last season actually played into their playoff implications and whether or not they would have been able to extend. But this year, you know, listen, first 47 games, they were 30-12-5. But since that All-Star break, 14-12-1. And I'm not a big person who focuses on statistics because I'm more of an eyeball test. But I definitely think that this is a team that there's probably been a voice within the room, whether it's the captain, Adam Lowry, or whoever may be speaking, just to say, we need to tighten things up. We need to get going. Because I do believe how you're playing at the end of the season does go into your mentality. People always say you just got to get in. But I do believe these last couple of weeks, we're talking about 7 games. These are important for the Winnipeg Jets, especially when you look at what's going to happen next week. We can't look past Calgary and Minnesota to close out this week. But when you have Nashville, Dallas, and Colorado coming in, these are all litmus tests. These are all teams that if you win or lose are going to have playoff implications to you. So the upcoming week, that's where they have to take their experience from last year. They got to get it going. And that's going to be a huge week for this Jets team.
So in terms of getting it going, then what do the Jets need to focus on in these final 2 weeks of the regular season?
You know, when they had their 6-game skid, and let's remember it's only 1 game that they've won, but one thing that head coach Rick Bowness said is that they were beating themselves. They were trying to do too much. And the one thing that I've noticed about this team, when we go back to how they did through the first 47 games and those 30 wins, is one of the things we spoke about, guys, was the structure that this Jets team was playing with. They had an identity. And what structure means is it means discipline in playing your role. And every player had a role. They all bought in, and they all knew how collectively as a 5-man unit they wanted to perform on the ice. I feel right now that that is not occurring, and there's too much individual play, and it's not that connected unit. And what that does is that creates turnovers, that's going to create mistakes, and they're not producing their offense through their defense. Now, yes, there's a couple new players in the lineup in Sean Monahan and Tyler Toffoli, but I don't think that's why this is happening. I think they have to get back to that structure that made them so successful, and really all that is discipline in doing your job on the ice and making sure you're playing as a collective and not as an individual. If they can get back that, couple that with the goaltending that they get from Connor Hellebuyck, they're going to return to their successful ways.
Brett, was it you that asked me the other morning? Somebody around here said, do you think adding Monahan and Toffoli threw off the chemistry of the team? Any thoughts on that, Leah?
You know, there's always that question. I mean, a lot of people were speaking about that with the Avalanche, right? Because they did so much at the deadline, whether or not they brought in too many guys. I know I work with Ryan Callahan, who's a former captain of the New York Rangers and played on the Tampa Bay Lightning, some big teams. And he said that's always a question to players when new ones come in at the deadline. Did we do too much? I don't necessarily think that's the case. I mean, I think we've seen what Sean Monahan has been able to do and the help that he is in the circle. And I think once we get into playoffs, you're really going to see why having that offensive touch of Tyler Toffoli is so important. I would say, though, that there's still an issue on their special teams, and maybe they're still trying to figure that out. And like I said, they don't have a lot of time to do that. And in the playoffs, as we know, it comes down to that special teams battle. So that's something that the Jets need to really kind of figure out before the end of the season and time is ticking.
Okay, so let's just suggest that the Jets, based on where they are right now, are likely to play Colorado Avalanche. Is there a benefit in playing the Avalanche and perhaps the Stars early in the playoffs?
There is, because right now the Jets are healthy. I mean, that is going to be huge. It's the most important thing in the postseason is who remains healthy. And right now, as the Jets go in, they have that health. Listen, it doesn't matter what you do, whether it's the first round or the Stanley Cup final, you got to take down these teams. You got to take down good teams. So why not get them out of the gate and be healthy and have your best available players on the ice to do what you can against a team like the Avalanche or the Stars, whoever it may be. So I really believe it's a good thing they find them early on in these playoffs, because as we go, as we know, everybody's going to get bumps and bruises. Knock on wood, there could be injuries to top players. So if you can get them early on, I say have at it. Let's go. Let's get it done and let's move on.
All right. How are you feeling overall, Leah? Like, because people, you know, people look at the conversations that we've had, whether it's with you or John Shannon or with Ken Wiebe over the season. Nobody was sounding any alarm bells 3 weeks ago that we needed to be concerned about what the Jets were doing. Where does this come from? This lack of discipline, this lack of connected play, because I think you're bang on in terms of what the problem is. I don't think that the Jets are minding their gap control. It feels like adherence to the system. It feels like buy into the system. How do you go from looking like you're all in on a certain way to play and then the flip of a switch in New Jersey, two nights after beating the Rangers at Madison Square Garden, Mark Scheifele looked like he was a Hart Trophy candidate. Mm. And then here we are lamenting, you know, one win in their last seven games.
I think it's just simply what Coach Bonus said, is players just trying to do too much. You know, as much as players can compartmentalize things and they're shown to move on, don't get this twisted. I mean, these players want to win. They know that this organization has gone out and put the pieces together. Kevin Cheveldayoff has done his job. He's brought in players. They know they have an opportunity here. And that can be a great deal of pressure. Now, that's what they're paid to deal with. But sometimes when it starts to go and new players come in and things are looking a little different and you're not getting the same ice time perhaps you were a month ago because of different things going on in the lineup, players, when they get out there, they just start to try to perform. And it's not out of selfishness. It's just out of the fact that they're trying to make sure that this team wins. And then when you get into a skid like they did, that even builds up more. But that's what makes teams great. Can you pull yourself out of it? Do you have the ability to get back to your basics? Because that's really what it is. Hockey is not a complicated game. It is get the puck in, go get it on the forecheck, create time in the offensive zone, use your defense to create offense and score the goal. So if they can get back to doing that, this is a team that a couple months ago people were saying this is going to be one of the teams to watch in the playoffs. That conversation has muted. I can honestly say that. I'm not setting off any kind of panic alarms, but I do think that next week is going to tell a lot in this tale for the Winnipeg Jets.
Leah Ekstahl, always a pleasure. You're awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, boys. Talk to you later.
Leah Ekstahl, ESPN host, commentator, and Alan. Analyst.
Easy for you to say, Brad.
Analyst. The word that throws me off is economist. That's the one where I can say it, but when I see it, I want to say, and as I once did while reading a newscast on a Sunday morning here at CJOB, economonomist. So, but I just had a thought about the Jets and the possibility of them facing the Avalanche in the first round of what I like to affectionately refer to as the North American Ice Hockey League Championships. One of my buddies has access to season tickets. He took me to a game last year. And he's an Avalanche fan.
Yes. And you know what I'm just thinking about? One of my best friends lives in Denver.
Oh, yeah. That would be cool.
Jackie.
When would the playoffs begin? You got a week off coming up.
Yeah, they begin. Oh, my goodness. They begin the 20th, I think, April 20th.
That falls in. You could go, possibly.
Brett said, I can go.
It is Mackling and McGarry. Our next segment, we give away tickets for Dauphin's Country Fest. 2-day pass with camping, June 28th to the 30th.
Who's going to decide who's winning these tickets this morning?
I don't know.
I don't want to decide. Can we bring in one of the youngsters, one of our producers from Youngsters Row behind us to make a decision?
We need to add to the jury because this is the deliberations this morning have been really tough. We're asking about a time that you were late and there were consequences, or maybe there weren't consequences, or maybe you narrowly avoided being late for a chance to win, the last chance. Inspired by the 8 cruise passengers who were denied entry. They were late for boarding and they got stranded in Africa. You can read about that at CJOB.com. But right now, Greg, we need some more reaction to the provincial budget.
Clay Young has been out and about this morning and speaking to decision makers and those who have an eye on such things. Clay, where have you been this morning? And good morning, by the way.
Good morning to you. We're here at the Delta Hotel in downtown Winnipeg. And it's a, I guess you would call this a post-budget breakfast. It's been organized by the Manitoba Chambers of Commerce. They hold this every time there's a budget. The finance minister, Minister Sala, is addressing the crowd here. It's sold out, by the way. And joining me now is our good friend Christopher Adams, who's a professor of political studies, University of Manitoba, St. Paul's College. Thanks for, I pulled you out while he was still addressed. Thanks for coming out into the hallway. But what did you think about yesterday's budget?
Thanks, Clay. And I've seen a lot of the overviews of this budget. But I thought it was a budget really aimed at housing as well as at the healthcare sector. They're really positioning it as a middle-class budget, but they're also a lot of things for renters and lower income folks. I would say it's a real change from what we've seen with the Progressive Conservative budgets over the past number of years, but it's a budget with which really tries to address a lot of the election promises that Wab Kanu made over the summer and the fall last year.
You and I talked during an earlier hit on Global News Morning about some of the good things and the bad things when it comes to owning property. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I would say that if your income is at $200,000, which there are not that many people who enjoy that, but higher income folks will be paying down the road. Also, very large properties, large houses, those will have significant changes in taxes. But I would say that if you're middle class folks with an average house and average income, it's a pretty good budget. There are concerns that the province might be going more into debt and deficit, and it is a concern about provinces across Canada that there are difficulties. And so some of the assumptions in this budget are that retail and income will be continuing in the province, and that the province's budget will be benefiting by that. I guess one thing is we don't know what would happen if we had huge flooding over the coming year or major drought issues. So there are some assumptions, as every provincial budget does have in it. But I think generally speaking, my sense in media lockup yesterday afternoon is people are welcoming this budget as addressing many of those promises from last summer and fall.
I want to circle back about home ownership. And you gave an example earlier this morning with me, if I owned a home in Linden Woods, I might get hit by this budget.
Yeah, there were concerns last year that with the rebate checks that were more beneficial to those with larger homes and more valuable homes than those in smaller bungalows and things like that. So there is the NDP is moving to a flat tax credit. I'm not, you know, up on all the technical terms, but I would say that the coming year we'll see a change to a credit of $1,500 instead of something that adjusts to the value of a home. So that's to the benefit of middle and lower income households compared to larger households. And Clay, as you know, the NDP is more oriented to the working class and not so much to the business class and upper income folks. So, and that's the reason why you see more downtown ridings and voting for the NDP compared to the suburbs. But we saw in the last election, almost all of Winnipeg went to the NDP. So there clearly is going to be some interest among people of all different incomes for this budget.
You know, the minister stressed during our conversation with him this morning, you know, he's really focused on improving health care and, you know, hiring about 1,000 new healthcare professionals. And I came back at him and I said, you know, every province is facing this problem, shortage of doctors and nurses. And how are you going to sell someone who's graduated from medical school in Nova Scotia to come here as opposed to Alberta? Your thoughts?
Well, I think, Wab Kanu and Adrian Sala in the press scrum yesterday, they're saying, well, look, these are homegrown professionals, that they will be trained, and there'll be people who will want to live in Winnipeg because it's affordable. People want to be in Manitoba because it's affordable. So that's their position. I would say that a lot of their money is going into training and post-secondary education, a lot of money going into that. So I think it's a homegrown attempt at a solution. But you're right, Clay, it's very aggressive. They're saying within the coming year, 1,000 healthcare professionals will be trained, will be here, hired, and of which 100 will be doctors and over 200 will be nurses.
All right. You're impartial, like I am. Good budget, middle of the road. You're okay with it?
I would say it's an aggressive. I would say, yeah, it's a good budget. There's some areas that needed to be addressed, but we'll have to see in the coming year all these promises. How much can they deliver on these promises?
All right, Chris, thank you.
Thanks, Clay. Great.
All right, guys, that's it for here, and let's throw it back to you guys.
Global News Morning's Clay Young joining us live with reaction on the budget. He was at the Manitoba Chambers of Commerce breakfast. We've got Country Fest tickets to give away. We're asking you about a time that you were late and there were consequences, or maybe you weren't late, but you almost had serious consequences, like Brett in Selkirk, one of our runners-up.
In 1987, I was on the tall ship HMAV Bounty. You may recognize the name or recognize the ship. It was used in the Mel Gibson movie, The Bounty. We had made an overnight stop in a port on the south coast of Australia. We were all told that the ship would be departing at 6 a.m. sharp. A group of us walked into the town and got partying with some folks from a cruise ship that was also in port. We ended up on that ship, which was parked in front of the Bounty at the dock. The ship was the Achilles Laurel. The boat that sunk, gee whiz, had been taken over in 1985 by terrorists, pushing guy in a wheelchair off to drown in the ocean. Boy, I remember that. The festivities went on late into the night. I woke up in fright, not knowing what time it was. Started running through hallways in the ship, frantically trying to find my way out. It felt like about 2 hours of searching. I finally found the gangway and got onto the dock. Right away, I looked down on the dock and the Bounty crew were untying the gangway to that ship. Virtually nothing left in the tank. I ran yelling down the dock with huge relief. I got onto the deck of the Bounty. It was exactly 6 a.m. If I'd missed the ship, I have no idea what the next chapter of the story would have read. I'm exhausted reading that.
Imagine being on the other side of the world and potentially left behind. What Yikes. Would you do? Difficult decision this morning as well. Greg, another runner up here, Peter, who he just had, this is a calamitous chain of events.
Talk about being late as a rookie teacher coaching a basketball team. I forgot to requisition a bus for a road game. So we left for the game an hour late. When we finished the game, the spare bus that had saved our day died on the highway. Another was sent to pick us up. We arrived 2.5 hours late. That's now 3.5 hours in all so far. When I got back, it was, well, February 14th. I had a date, no cell phone. She was not impressed. And to add to the misery, someone hit my car Come in the on. Parking lot at school and damaged the rear tire, so it wasn't drivable. I got home really late that night, and there was no next date.
Well, you know what? Good. Because if after hearing that story, she still wouldn't give you another shot, Peter, she ain't worth it, bud. And he did add, just years later, checking on her social media, it turned out to be a good thing. Justice is served.
I love your journalism. Your journalism gene goes to work there. Well done, Brett.
Our winner, though, and again, a very difficult choice this morning. Many excellent tales and memories being shared, but William wins the day. Says, I showed up late to Mr. Prime's last geography class at Stonewall Collegiate. He was a well and still respected man in the community. He taught my mother and my uncle, often confusing me for my uncle that he had taught 20 years prior. When I showed up late to his last class, by the way, the geography turned to drama. He clicked his heels, put his hands on his hips, and in his Trinidadian accent, he says, "Mr. Aitken, I knew it would be you. I knew it would be you who would show up late, and William has spelled it out this way, to my last class." He promptly placed me in a headlock, showcased me to the class.
Oh, boy.
And asked them if they could believe it was me, Mr. Aitken, who showed up late to his last class. They all said yes. And then I was paraded up and down the hall, headlocked in arm, and he asked all the teachers in the other classes if they too believed that I, Mr. Aitken, showed up late to his last class. They all said yes. They could believe it was me. I will remember that for the rest of my life. William says to Mr. Prime, and this is kind of reminding of something that someone else shared with us this morning from one of your favorite movies, Mr. Greg.
Why are you continuously late for this class, Mr. Spicoli? Why do you shamelessly waste my time like this?
I don't know.
Mr. Hand, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Took a deep dive into the world of garage organization. Our guest, Pat Canuga of Garage Living, told us how our stuff is preventing us from parking our cars in our garages. The purpose of that housing unit is for your automobile, not for your totes full of collectibles.
Hey, why are you looking at me like that?
You should have seen all the Christmas stuff my mom had in our garage. It's a miracle that they were able to get a car in there. But what impact is stuff having on the rest of our home?
Our next guest is one of the most popular organizing and decluttering influencers in North America. She's coming to Winnipeg as part of the Home and Garden Show this weekend. Best known for weaving her psychology background and interest in neuroscience into her content, she promotes the importance of mental health and positive change in connection to getting organized. She partners with brands and publishers to create unique, authentic campaigns that reach thousands of people. We're really honored, thrilled, in fact, to have Megan Golightly coming to Winnipeg, as I mentioned, for the Home and Garden Show this weekend, joining us on The Start. Megan, good morning to you.
Hi, how are you? That was quite the intro for such an early time in the morning.
Well, you know, we start our day about 3 o'clock, so
we're ready
for supper, Brett and I, so we're in the home stretch here. But can we pick up on that psychology conversation, the idea of not wanting to get rid of things? I think some of us say, oh, I can't get rid of that. In your experience, why do those of us, I'm putting up my hand here, who are hesitant to get rid of items, so intent on holding on to them?
You know what? It's because we were born hunters and gatherers, right? We are kind of born to want to keep things in order to survive. The other thing is that our parents taught us to hang on to everything just in case, you know, because your great aunt gave it to you, because we spent some good money on that, because it reminds you of somebody. So we have been neurologically wired and biologically created to hang on to things. So we need to, one, be aware that that is happening and not beat ourselves up and give ourselves some grace that nobody's taught us this. We don't learn this in school. We don't learn this from our parents. So learning to let go of things also brings a great gift of learning to let go of emotions and of feelings, and it's all interrelated. So that's what I love to talk about on my Instagram every day, all day long.
Well, and that's a great point, because I think about some of the junk that I know I've got holed away, squirreled away, and I don't even know which closet. When I moved into my place, I came with boxes galore, full of crap, and I just shoved them in somewhere so that they were out of the way. But I think, like, I've got a collection of, I don't know if you've ever heard of something called Garbage Pail Kids, but in the 80s, there was like it was a knockoff of the Cabbage Patch Kids, and I had a collection of their cards, and they're still in a box somewhere. I haven't looked at them for 30 years. Yeah. Why do I have them? And it's because I know that maybe one day I'll look at them and it'll make me smile.
Yeah, so once we realize that there is a cost to clutter, there is a cost to clutter. Women, there was a study done at UCLA, and our cortisol level or our stress level is directly related to how many things we have in our house. And then we wonder why we're stressed. So I'm not a minimalist, but what I do put on my Instagram page and in my how-to guides is you know, the reasons why we hang on to things, all those excuses of the just in case, I paid too much money, I've had it for so long, you know, I'm emotionally attached to it, all of those things. And then the solutions to get past those. That's what I do on Instagram. And different questions to ask yourself so that you can frame it up in a different way so that you're not setting yourself up to repeat the story about the story about the story of why to keep it like a bad relationship. You know, we need to think about what and who we can be without it. And again, it's not minimalism. It's just getting rid of that cost of clutter.
You know, and I can, I'm hearing you now with regard to this psychological impact of living in clutter. So when my wife is more upset about it than I am, there's a reason for that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Women are just, our cortisol is directly related to how many things we have in our house. So it bothers us more. Men see it as their stuff, quote unquote, and it just doesn't bother you as much. But for us, you know, the way we're wired, we want to get it all organized. Now, you can't organize until you've decluttered. So I talk about that a lot as well, is that there is a progression. It's like a learner's license and a driver's license. And if you expect to just say, I'm going to get organized, but you're not willing and don't know how to let go, you're dead in the water. All you're going to do is get frustrated and make it even harder the next time you try to do it, because adrenaline is going to build in your system so high that the quit response happens and you don't want to do it. So I really give people grace because I've been through it. I hit rock bottom when I got divorced and I tried to move a 5,000 square foot house into a 1,000 square foot house, and it didn't work. The container was too small. And what hurt was me. So I had to find a way to change. And then for the last 16 years, I've been helping clients do it. So I'm obsessed with it, but I'm obsessed with it because I realize that people don't know anything about it. They don't know how, but they expect to just be able to do it.
Well, and so one of my problems is, I mean, I know that the emotional attachment I have to whatever piece of random junk I come across is going to be a problem. But for me, the idea of decluttering and getting organized, I always stop myself before I even start because I don't know where to start. So if exactly. you don't know where to start, do you have a tip on that?
Yeah, I have two. I'm actually running a course right now too, that's on Tuesdays and Thursdays, that is about how to help people when they just become so overwhelmed that they can't manage to do the other method of mine, which is in my how-to guides, where you take everything out of the room or out of the fridge or out of the cupboard, and then you have things earn their right to go back in by asking strategic questions instead of what your brain is wired to do, the story about the story about the story. That's all your brain knows. So I teach you different questions to ask so that you can look at it objectively, factually, instead of emotionally. Because you won't win if you look at it emotionally. You will not be able to let things go. So I teach people how to fall in love with their house again and live life to be present and have more time, energy, space, relationships, etc. And not, you're worth so much more than your stuff. You know, big talker Betty Crocker here. I'm sure you've heard it all before and it sounds like a lecture, but I really do teach people a different way on my Instagram.
So Brett just sort of asked you that whole idea of preparing yourself for going down that road. Have you got a tip in terms of, I think I'm ready. Maybe I've progressed past that point of not only do I want to start, but I think I might be ready to start. How do I know if I'm ready, Megan?
Well, you just said you're ready. So there you go. But now you need to know how. So there are four things you can do when you're so overwhelmed that you look at a room that you can't even think about it. The first thing is you just go and try to reduce the amount of things in that room by picking out garbage and recycling. That's it. Then you go away from the room, and the next time you go back, you pick away things that go elsewhere, either out the door to donation, those easy hanging, low hanging fruit, or things that just belong elsewhere that need redesignation within your house. And then the third time you go back, you deal with those sentimental things and you make the decision once, you touch it once, you don't deliberate because you know the right questions to ask yourself to not cycle through those seven reasons why we keep things. You know, you need to get your brain out and of that loop. And once you start to do that, then your brain is rewired and it's way easier the next time. Plus visually, you see less in the room and so you're more able to attack it because you've had that reward of dopamine and you're like, I can do this. So there really is kind of some science and psychology behind it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love talking about.
So if it feels hard and you're saying it's hard, it's okay that it's okay. You feel that way because it is difficult.
Yeah, and that's adrenaline building in your system. That's what makes a deer stand up in the forest to look for more food. That's adrenaline building in your system, telling you you're on the right track. Low-level anxiety is fine. But if you let that anxiety get too high, what happens neurologically is a quit response happens. And what you need to do is get small wins so that you push down on that adrenaline and you get a dopamine hit and you stay in the game and you stay in the game and you stay on the ladder. But if you let it build so much and you don't have the right skills, that adrenaline is going to build so high and that anxiety will be so high that that quit response will happen. It's David Goggins. It's like a Navy SEAL thing. So you got to be a Navy SEAL in your house, but you need to know what's going on and you need to know the right questions to ask so that you can get out of that loop of just in case, what if, you know, my grandkid might need this. My grandkid's grandkid might need this. You know, you start looking at things in a whole different way so that you can live in your space and not let your space live for you.
Awesome advice. Thank you for sharing this wisdom, Megan. We appreciate it very much.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to find me, my Instagram is @GoSimplified and my website is Go-Simplified.
Megan Golightly coming to the Winnipeg Home and Garden Show this weekend. That website is winnipeghomeandgardenshow.com and Megan will be on the main stage Saturday at 5:30 and Sunday at noon at the convention center. And hopefully this helps because I have so much stuff crammed into my closets that I haven't touched for years. Why do I have it? But yet I keep, when I moved out of my Corridan apartment and in temporarily to St. Boniface, I had planned to get rid of half of the books that I owned.
Right.
I successfully parted ways with five of them.
Okay, well, that's a start. But I have to ask you, because I know for me, after listening to Megan, I'm letting myself off the hook a little bit for being the way I am.
Yeah.
Now, it's not an excuse to continue, but it's a reason why I am in the circumstance I am. But it is going to be difficult. And so it's okay for it to be difficult.
Yeah.
And taking comfort in that.
Yeah. Just sort of embrace the fact that it's okay to have these feelings about whatever it is that you're hanging on to and that it's okay to let them go. We beat ourselves up with guilt over silly things.
So many things.
This is a silly thing to beat yourself up over. You can learn more about her online, Megan Golightly. It is 9:48, Mackling and McGarry. Brian Baumler, by the way, is going to join us on Friday morning at 9:35 to continue to tee up the Home and Garden Show.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.